Hello and welcome to Tales from Wisteria Lane, the podcast where we give you a fair view of all things Desperate Housewives. We're the boyfriends. I'm Billy Ray.
And I'm Joel.
And today we're doing Season 6, Episode 6 of Desperate Housewives, Don't Walk on the Grass.
Love that title.
I do as well.
So much better than last episode's title.
So in this episode, I'm going to be doing the overview and leading, and Joel is going to be giving us the trivia. So do you have anything to start us off with?
I do. So this episode was directed by David Grossman and written by Marco Panette, and it aired on the 1st of November 2009. So in this episode, the title comes from a song from the musical Anyone Can Whistle, which is Everybody Says Don't. We also haven't done these in a while, so international titles.
Oh, brilliant. I haven't seen those in ages.
No, neither have I. So the German title translates to There Must Be a Punishment. The Italian translates to Rules and Consequences.
Love that.
And the French title translates to The School Is Over.
Oh, even better. Actually, yeah, that's my favourite.
That's the best one, I think.
School is over.
School is over. So in this week, on the 26th of October, a crater was found in northern Latvia, believed at first to be a meteorite strike, and it is since revealed to be a hoax perpetrated by telecom operator Tele2. Not quite sure why they would have made that a hoax.
I don't know. That seems like a really lame prank.
Yeah, well, it has no connection to your business.
Yeah.
So it's just, there's no, yeah.
It's like, haha, we made a hole.
On the Tuesday, a British couple are missing after their yacht is hijacked by Somali pirates off of the Seychelles. And I will just say, growing up made me terrified of Somali pirates. That's all you heard about in the news in like the late noughties.
You know, I don't remember any news about it. I remember watching a film about it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, when I was little, because it was one of those films where it was like, these are real pirates, not like swashbuckling wooden leg pirates. And I thought, wow, mind blown. Pirates are real.
Who'd have thought? I know, right?
Well, when you're a kid, you don't think pirates are like real.
No.
Not these days, but there you go.
But yeah, it made me believe that I would have to take into consideration piracy in my everyday life more often.
No, I mean, the scariest form of piracy we have are those adverts. You wouldn't steal a handbag.
You wouldn't steal a car.
I think they're on VHSs.
They're on DVDs.
They're on DVDs as well.
They weren't on VHSs. So, on the Wednesday, Chinese police rescue over 2,000 children in a six-month campaign against human trafficking.
Good job, guys.
Yeah. And the Matthew Shepard Act, providing legal protection against hate crimes to lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people, is signed into law in the United States by President Barack Obama.
That's quite a late year for that to be a thing.
2009, yes. So on Thursday the 29th of October, Rockstar's Grand Theft Auto 4, The Ballad of Gay Tony, was released.
Okay.
Friday the 30th, native tribesmen in the Amazon rainforest discover a downed Brazilian military transport plane, finding 9 survivors. And on Saturday the 31st of October, it was, of course, Halloween. And a video of the kidnapped Irish priest, Father Michael Sinnott, was released by his captors in the Philippines. And the captors want $2 million in ransom. And it's the first evidence that Sinnott is still alive since his abduction on the 11th of October that year.
That is horrible.
So that was 20 days, nearly 3 weeks.
The church can definitely afford the ransom, but still, that's awful.
Yeah. So, and on Sunday the 1st, a ship carrying 100 tons of hydrochloric acid sinks in a section of the Yangtze River in China's central Hubei province after colliding with another vessel. And the West Atlas oil rig that has leaked oil and gas for 10 weeks into the Timor Sea catches fire after an attempt to plug the leak. So it was not a very good day for our oceans.
So it wasn't safe to be in the ocean because you'd get acid. And it wasn't safe to be on the surface of the ocean because you'd be on fire.
Yeah. Or attacked by Somali pirates.
So just stay away from the oceans.
Stay away from the oceans in 2009, guys. If anyone figures out time travel, goes back to November 2009 or October time, just stay out the ocean.
Yeah, look at the ocean and be like, I'm a do a 180.
Yeah.
And go the other way.
Like, I'm a PO. See you later. And then the number one song in the US was Fireflies by Owl City. And the number one song in the UK was Fight for This Love by Cheryl Hull.
Oh my god, they changed. I like that Fireflies song. And that Cheryl Cole one, that's a throwback.
Oh, that Cheryl Cole one is an absolute throwback.
It's, I remember, a bop.
Yeah, it was a bop.
It was a bop.
And that's all my trivia.
Brilliant. So previously, Gabby's motherhood was brought into question by some Fairview muffers.
Again.
And, kind of rightly so in some of the circumstances, but not all of them.
Yeah.
Lynette was promoted to senior vice president of Carlos's company, and she still hasn't mentioned her pregnancy. Danny gave the Bolan's gun to Julie for protection, which Susan hilariously used to shoot Catherine. Luckily, it only grazed her arm. But now, obviously, the Bolans have this looming threat of being found out because of the gun.
Yeah, and Angie is getting heavily involved in the Susan-Catherine situation now.
And Angie manipulated Catherine into not calling the police and asking her questions about their gun.
Yeah, she's there like, I see it too. Between you and Mike. Susan's a hag. I believe you.
Right? You know what? You and Mike are endgame.
We're endgame, Archie.
So we're going to start with Bree. And as you can probably tell by the title of the episode and also the international titles of the episode, the theme of this episode seems to be about rules, following rules, and what happens when you break rules.
Yeah, like to be punished for the things that you need to be punished for.
And Bree is currently cheating on her husband.
Yes.
So that's a whole Christian rule to break, isn't it?
Well, yeah, with a person that seems to just break all the rules anyway, like this opening montage.
Mm.
But like, who parks in a disabled bay?
So because of all of the horrible things that Carl does, Mary Alice tells us that Bree doesn't want to fall in love with him due to his table manners, his eye for women, and his general demeanor. But she is. So
yeah.
She has to dump him.
And the first one, I'm just going to point out, doesn't make you a bad person. Like, the first one had him with a little bit of food in his face because he was eating a sandwich and he had like some mustard or something on his face. And I'm like, that doesn't make you a bad person.
Yeah, we can't all eat like a bird.
Yeah, we can't all just, who eats a sandwich with a knife and fork or something? Like, you just...
I mean, literally The Sims and that's it.
Yeah.
He seems a bit hurt by the dumping, but showing that he had a gift for her, which is a brooch that was passed down from his grandparents and is a family heirloom, which is a genuinely quite sweet gesture. This yeah. convinces Bree to continue with the affair.
Oh God, she's so much better than Carl. But Carl is hot.
But they do have an odd chemistry, don't they?
They really do have an odd chemistry. Like, it's a pair that I never expected to see, but I'm kind of happy I did.
Quick question. Do we have brooches in England? Is that a thing?
We do have brooches in the UK. It's quite an archaic thing. I don't really think brooches are really a modern day thing anymore.
Like old-fashioned, yeah?
Yeah.
I was going to say, because they're a bit ugly. And I can't imagine any of our friends walking around and just pinning a brooch onto their shirt because it's...
No, I'd have a brooch on like my suit lapel on like my sky blue suit. I have a little, well, it's more of a pin. It's a pin, not a brooch. What I have, and it's got that little B pin.
They all seem a bit chunky and 3D, don't they?
It was a very nice brooch.
No, it wasn't.
I wouldn't wear it, but I didn't think it... There are uglier brooches out there.
I'm not sure if there are uglier brooches. So it's nighttime now and Bree and Austin are heading to Susan and Mike's for dinner and we get a bit of an awkward interaction as Bree demands less public touching from Austin and Austin says it's the only affection he gets. So obviously she's getting some elsewhere and she doesn't want to be touched by her husband.
No, well, of course she doesn't want to be touched by her husband because she doesn't want to be with her husband. But the fact that Austin, she's there saying less public touching and he's like, it's the only touching I get. I was like, so basically you're inappropriately touching Bree. She's told you she doesn't want to be touched and you're saying, well, I'm doing it in public because you won't make a scene. So that's the only time I get to touch you. No, sir, that's not cool. That's weird.
There's also a little bit of weird mixed messaging, considering that in the last episode, she seemed to want to become a better wife again. So I think the writers just aren't talking to each other when it comes to writing Bree.
No, maybe not, actually, because obviously it is different writers for different episodes, which I do find odd.
Yeah, like, do you want to be a better wife or do you just not want to be a bad Christian? Because it's not both.
Yeah, and when you have different writers for different episodes, you get weird little inconsistencies like this. And I get shows having guest writers every now and again. But to consistently have different writers in different episodes.
So they enter the house and it's instantly awkward as Susan is surprised to see Bree's new brooch, as apparently it's actually hers and Carl gave it to her years ago, but it somehow went missing. She thinks that she lost it and Carl's really mad at her.
Why would you wear it around Susan's place?
I know.
Like, why would you do that?
I guess she thought it was brand new, right?
No, Carl said it's a family heirloom.
Oh, yeah.
Carl told her it's a family heirloom, and you'd assume Susan would be aware of the existence of this family heirloom, considering how long she was married to Carl. So you wouldn't take the risk of wearing it around Susan's house when you're trying to keep your affair with her ex-husband a secret.
Yikes. And then because this is a hilarious TV show, Carl actually happens to walk in at this moment.
Yeah, with Julie.
And Susan tells him how crazy it is that Bree found the long-lost brooch. She then gives it to Susan, saying that she couldn't possibly keep hold of it. given the circumstances, while giving Carl a little bit of a dirty eye.
Well, because of what came out in this scene. So it was established that Carl actually stole the brooch. It wasn't established, it was implied, very heavily implied.
It's
that
Carl later
stole the brooch from Susan and then yelled at Susan for losing the brooch. And then Carl's like, I didn't yell. And then Super Julie jumps in and she's like, you kind of did, Dad.
I loved that.
Absolutely loved that. So that's why Bree's given Carl the side eye. Not because he gave her something that was a family heirloom that once belonged to Susan, but that he stole it from Susan and then berated Susan.
Yeah, it's the demeanor again, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the overall attitude that Carl has and his lack of, in Bree's words later on in the episode, lack of scruples.
Bree goes to see Carl in his office and basically calls him a big idiot for stealing back the brooch and then giving it to Bree.
Yeah.
She then storms off claiming that relationship is over, O-V-A-H, and Carl suddenly asks her to marry him.
Yeah, with no ring, like, that's an instant no.
She says no, but Carl interrupts her a bunch and tells her to think it over. And quite frankly, I'm like, I don't really think I need to think it over, because Bree came over to end this relationship because of what's just happened.
This is such a weird scene.
Yeah, everyone watching this for the first time must have been like, what the hell's going on?
What the fuck is actually happening here? Like, Carl is hot, but he's not marriage material. The fact that Bree was there, like, you're a horrible person, you're disgusting, what kind of person would steal something from their ex-wife and then lie about it? That was your excuse? You stole so much, you lost track?
I think she's also realizing that she doesn't want to get with another stealer.
Well, no, another thief. But it's more of the fact that His excuse was like, oh, cause she was like, why would you do that or what have you? And he was like, oh, well, how about the fact that I was being taken to the cleaners by, you know, a woman that was divorcing me or what have you? And I was just like, let's not act like you're the injured party here, Carl. She was taking you to the cleaners because you cheated on her.
Yeah, so the excuse doesn't hold any weight. No. I'm afraid. So she goes back over to Susan's house with a freshly baked pie, but really she just wants more information on Susan and Carl and the brooch. So Susan tells her about it and how he always gave her things when he felt guilty. And then Bree asks Susan about the good times, which Susan says there were good times. And then Bree is given the brooch back.
Yeah.
Although Bree, you need to stop, because by specifically asking about the good times, it's almost like you're saying, I am going to get back with him and I need to justify it.
That's essentially what she's doing. That's why she was asking about the good times. But it's just the fact that at the end of this scene where Susan's like, the truth is, if he'd have begged for, you know, my forgiveness and told me that he'd change, I'd have taken him back. And I was like, gross. Can we stop trying to act like Carl is a fantastic person? He's hot. He's funny to have on our screens, but he is not a good person.
No, but that's love for you.
Yeah.
Like, I think we've all kind of been there when we've dated a douchebag and then we think, oh, if he was sorry, I'd have him back.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We've all been there.
So Bree's story ends with her going back to the office to see Carl and basically tell her that she doesn't want to marry him until, well, firstly, she wants to have the divorce with Orson settled.
Mm.
She demands no sex for a month so that they can be clear-headed, and she is interested in marrying the new Carl that he claims that he is becoming, and she gives back the brooch and tells him to give it back to her later when it means something.
Yeah, I'd say this is fair for Bree to do, because Carl's there like, I will be the man that I promised to be with you by my side. No, bitch, I ain't getting married to a man on the promise that he will be a person he's going to claim that he's going to become. No, our girl needs evidence of this. Before she jumps right in.
You know, this is also a good idea because once the divorce is settled and she hasn't had sex with Carl for a while, she might realize that maybe this isn't actually love or something that she really wants right now, and that she actually doesn't want to be with anyone right now, and that this was a nice distraction from the horror show that is the marriage with Orson. So maybe this is a good thing.
Yeah, true.
So Gabby's story starts at Juanita's school as Mary Alice tells us about the principal, Mrs. Ann Peterson, who believes in strict rules and behaviours, and apparently she uses these rules to punish those who don't follow them.
She's a real hard ass.
We then see Gabby and Carlos in the audience for a school play. Gabby tells Carlos about how untalented Juanita is before her performance starts.
Absolute mood. It's me as a parent going through the little booklet to find another child. I'm like, I'm going to be this one's parent. She looks like she's going to be good.
Yeah, she is given stage mom energy, isn't she?
Real stage mom energy.
And then the performance starts, in which Juanita mispronounces the word persecution 3 times, leading to her to swear in front of everyone, much to Gabby and Carlos's embarrassment.
Miles. whoever this Miles kid is in the middle. And then instead of stepping forward and announcing your line like a child should in the show, Miles steps forward and to the side, blocking Juanita.
Well, they're not professional actors, babe.
I do not care. That director should have been like, absolutely no blocking anyone else. If I was Juanita, I'd have kicked him in the back of the leg so that he fell to the floor. That kid is going to be gay.
Well, this is a look into our future, isn't it? So the next day, Gabby and Carlos are in Mrs. Peterson's office as she tells them all of the things that she's doing to punish Juanita, including a sorry letter, as well as making her do cafeteria duty and some of her cleaning stuff and such. It's all a bit much. Carlos is fine with it, but Gabby stands up for the nasty bench. Sorry, stands up to the nasty bench, leading to Mrs. Peterson blaming Juanita swearing on Gabby's, and I quote, dubious parenting skills, unquote. And Gabby decides to take Juanita out of school after this, leaving with a good insult, because her pride's been quite damaged recently with when it comes to parenting.
This seems to be the consistent theme for the season, right? Gabby's dubious parenting skills and what have you, but I'm not really sure how I feel about these punishments either, but I was on Gabby's side in this. Don't get me wrong, Juanita does need to be punished, and she needs to understand that her actions do have consequences, and you're never too young to learn self-control and a little bit of restraint, but those punishments did seem overdramatic. Like, yeah. Can't you just pull her from the play and give it attention?
It was a bit much. Like, she just swore, so she deserves a little bit of a punishment, but all of this, it's just too much, lady.
Yeah, like drafting a letter of apology to everyone that heard the word.
Would that not be enough?
Yeah.
I mean, that is labour.
Although, actually, this is the year of our Lord 2009, so there are computers, so really you only have to type out one letter of apology and print it off a million times.
So Carlos tells Gabby that because of the time of year, they can't find another school to enroll Juanita in, and that she's going to have to be homeschooled by Gabby. They then argue about whose fault it is that Juanita knows so many swear words by talking about all of the times that each of them said, oh, blank this, blank that, around Juanita. And we have a clip.
What a blank of a day! Earl at the office is such a blank! I want to kick the blank out of his blank!
Oh, yeah? How about that blanking hairdresser totally screwed up my blanking hair. Look at me, I'm totally blanked.
The blanking client didn't sign the deal and we lost a blank load of money. Wah, blank, blank, blank.
Okay, we are both at fault. But you're homeschooling her.
Fine, but I know someone who isn't getting blanked tonight.
Fine with me. I blanked off earlier.
What happens to Juanita when she goes up to third grade and she surpasses Gabby?
Yeah, this is a brilliant idea for a storyline.
I think it's hilarious. I was very nearly homeschooled myself, so
the idea of Gabby homeschooling Juanita is just brilliant.
Can't you just hire a tutor?
Yeah, you could do that. I mean, they have so much money. It would make so much more sense.
Or what you could do, Carlos, is look at public schools, because all Carlos said was no private schools have space.
Yeah. That's not happening, though.
No mention of public school.
How come you're almost homeschooled?
Because I failed the Kent test by 2 points, and they wouldn't appeal it. My mum tried to appeal it.
What's the Kent test?
The Kent test is the test you take when you're in year six to see if you're eligible for grammar school.
Oh, cool. I don't think it was called that when I was in school, though. So they wanted to homeschool you to give you the chance of getting into a private school?
No, my mum only put grammar schools on the list of schools that she wanted me to go to.
I mean, that was a bit of a reach, wasn't it?
How rude. I was an intelligent year six. Thank you very much.
No, I don't mean that. It's just, aren't they more expensive?
No, grammar schools, not private schools.
Oh, grammar schools. That's a bit of a reach for you, isn't it?
Fuck you. So she only put grammar schools on the list, and then I failed the Kent test by 2 points. And because I only put grammar schools on the list, and the admissions board or whoever it was that does the rulings refused to allow the appeal to go through for me, I therefore had no school to go to.
You know, I almost wished that your mum did homeschool you for a year just so that I could have some stories about how that went.
Yeah, absolutely not. That was not going to happen. My mum was not homeschooling me. I would not have allowed it.
I would love to have heard about Alison homeschooling you. Oh, the stories would be endless.
God, I'd have been a freak. I would have lost the very first, like my first year of secondary school. I would have lost. That's so much social skills.
I mean,
that's gone right out the window.
Yeah.
Social skills that my mum herself is sorely lacking. So one of us needed them.
It'd be like Incredibles 2. Like, oh my God, why did they change maths? Maths is maths. Anyway, Gabby is now homeschooling Juanita, and it's going as well as you think it would.
She made her iron for gym class. which is genius in and of itself. You might as well use the situation to get some housework done.
Yeah, so there is also the fact that Gabby's using this as some sort of free labor, which is a bit concerning. And Juanita doesn't want to do the reading anymore, so she keeps pushing the book onto the floor. We then see Carlos come home to find Gabby pretty much fighting Juanita and trying to get her to pick up the book, like she's physically on her back like a golem or something.
Mm.
Following this, Carlos comes down and says that Juanita is very angry with Gabby for getting her taken out of school, and he says that he couldn't defend Gabby because Gabby was in the wrong in this instance. He says taking Juanita out of school wasn't for Juanita and it was for Gabby's pride, and he also says that she has a right to be angry as she now can't go to school and be around all of her friends and no one's allowed to come over since the Mad Monkey incident.
But see, this is it. The chimp thing was not Gabby's fault at all. Well, not all Gabby's fault, anyway.
Well, it kind of was.
No, it wasn't. She didn't cause the clown to pop a balloon in the face. She didn't cause the monkey to work two shifts the day before and therefore overbook the monkey.
Well, she hired a wild animal to be around children, and then she demanded it work rather than resting against the handler's advice.
I would have done the same thing. Handler shouldn't have agreed the session then.
It is both of their faults for different reasons. Some of it does lean more towards Gabby, but that's only because that's what we've seen.
Yeah, well, yeah, we don't really see Carlos at home a lot. If anything, actually, Gabby could then say, well, maybe you should be home more and we'd have a calmer child.
So Gabby has a sit down with Juanita and tells her about how she was bullied by kids when she was Juanita's age too, and so she wanted to stick up for Juanita against the principal. But Juanita says that it would have all been fine if Gabby had just left it be. She apologizes to Juanita and asks if she still thinks that she's a good mum, but Juanita says that she just wants to read.
It's so sad. It's a really sad scene.
It's very sad.
Poor old Gabby. Nobody believes she's a good mum.
No, not really. But I don't think she's a bad mum.
I think she's learning. Every parent learns as they're going, and Juanita is their first child, so everything that Juanita does more often than not will be a first, because before this Gabby and Carlos had no maternal instinct really.
Exactly. I mean, what is a good mom at the end of the day anyway?
Yeah, exactly.
So let's move on to Lynette. Tom comes home very late at night with a couple of college friends, having been drinking rather than studying, and he wakes up a very angry Lynette. Tom does a terrible job of explaining himself, and Lynette gives him a good telling off.
What the fuck is faced? And Lynette's like, you're drunk. And then that teenage kid or whatever is like, beg your pardon, I'm faced, he's drunk. And I'm like, what the fuck is faced?
Faced, I'm imagining, is either...
like buzzed?
Not drunk, like buzzed, or maybe it's high.
Oh, maybe it is high.
When I heard the word faced, I thought, isn't that more drunk? It sounds like it would mean like you're off your face kind of thing.
Totally wasted and or thrashed by alcohol.
So he's actually saying I'm more drunk.
But he wasn't more drunk. The other dude seemed like paralytic.
Mm. Yeah, so Tom seems to be making some friends with the younger guys.
Yeah, kind of weird.
So the next day, Lynette receives a phone call for Tom, and hears that there's a big college party happening. So she goes over to the party to steal Tom away from it. She finds some college guys, but they insist that he just dropped off the beer keg and left. They then say that Tom isn't their friend, and Lynette wonders why he's doing so much for them in that case. And after threatening to take away their alcohol, they tell her that they gave him the answers for an exam.
He's cheating.
Yeah. Oh, I couldn't believe it.
It's really not a surprise to me that Tom would cheat.
No, but I thought the storyline was going to be about how he's trying to be young and he's making friends with young people and being reckless. You know, that kind of thing. That's very Tom.
Mm.
So the cheating, although when I think about it, isn't a massive surprise. It did come out of nowhere for me.
Mm.
So back at home, Lynette questions Tom for cheating on the test, and Tom says that he's basically failing college completely. Apparently, learning Mandarin at their age is actually very difficult.
Who'd have thought learning a language at an older age is tough?
Yeah, because as it turns out, learning anything at an older age is pretty tough.
Yeah.
He tells Lynette that he's drowning, and she says she doesn't care, which was a mood, and that he has to seek help or talk to her, but not cheat on tests because of the principle of it all.
Mm.
Tom then calls out Lynette's principles, saying that she isn't much better, as she's lying to her best friend, and that she could lose Gabby as a friend, and she could get fired. Tom says there are times in life when you have to break the rules to survive, and tells Lynette to stop acting better than him because she's not.
Which to a certain extent I do get. He's like, oh, you know, you caught me cheating, fine, don't pat me on the back, but just don't do this holier than thou kind of skit that you're trying to put on. But Tom did say he's failing, well, he's What he said was he's failing statistics, which is a compulsory module that he doesn't need necessarily, but is compulsory, but his Mandarin is touch and go.
I'm a bit confused. Why is he doing statistics when he was learning Mandarin?
Because Mandarin probably doesn't account for the entirety of his module, and I imagine there's a couple he has to take.
You see, this brings us back to the episode that we recorded previously where I was like, why doesn't he just learn it online?
Yeah.
It's not like he has to do much anyway, rather than waste money on going to school.
But the fact that Tom's claiming he'll never use statistics, but he wants to work in business, so surely statistics will be needed for him.
It's worrying to hear, isn't it? It's worrying to hear him say that.
But I don't know, is the module of statistics the same kind of statistics that I'm thinking of, or is it wording for something else and isn't actually what I'm thinking of?
I mean, I do get where Tom is coming from, and Lynette is obviously not being the best with her principles right now, but I don't think that what he's saying holds much weight, because he's not saying it authentically, he's just saying it to defend himself.
Yeah.
So for me, this doesn't hold any weight.
No, I get what you mean.
But yeah, Lynette was in mood when she was like, I don't care. He's like, I'm failing. And she's like, I don't care.
If only you'd said that to your daughter, hey, Lynette.
Oh.
I say Lynette. Felicity. Love you, Fliss.
She's a wonderful actress.
She is a delightful one.
So we're getting to the end now, and we're going to move on to Susan's very small story. So Catherine goes over to Susan's house to apologise for her behaviour after making a don't shoot me joke and says that she wants to be back to normal again. She wants to be friends again and things to just go back to normal.
Even when she's trying to be rational, she still comes across as completely unhinged.
Oh yeah, I mean, starting off with the don't shoot me joke at the door.
Her arm in a sling still and like,
So Susan implies that she doesn't see in their future for them to be friends and go back to normal, which was a bit harsh.
Mm.
And Catherine basically says that that's a shame because everyone is telling her that she should sue Susan for reckless endangerment. And we have a clip.
But I told them no, I could never sue Susan. In spite of everything, we're still friends. That isn't true anymore.
Brunch. Mike and I aren't really barbecue people. We like a good brunch. So let's give that a shot. I'm sorry. That was just a bad choice of words.
I love it. Sunday around 11, I'll bring a quiche. Aren't you glad I'm not crazy anymore?
Oh, yeah. This is so much better.
Can we stop trying to make quiche happen?
Oh, Catherine, what's happening? What's happening with Catherine?
She's blackmailing Susan.
Oh, it's all so messy.
It's so fun. Like, God, you really don't want to get into it with Catherine. She's so devious.
No, and she's got some great lines in this show.
Yeah.
You know, that there was this quiche line.
I'll bring a quiche.
And, aren't you glad I'm not crazy anymore? And then, obviously, the OG, I make scrapbooks too.
I make scrapbooks too.
Yeah, Susan's in a bit of a predicament because, quite frankly, there's not really much she can do here.
No, not really.
Luckily, she can trust Mike. It's not like she's with Carl.
Oh, no.
Later that night, Susan and Mike are about to have sex, and Mike gets a phone call from Catherine, who has a burst pipe in the bedroom, apparently. Susan decides that she's going to go over with Mike to find, and they find Catherine answering the door in lingerie, and Catherine says, it isn't actually a burst pipe in the bedroom, silly me, but something wrong with the garbage disposal. It's making a horrible noise.
Mike, seriously, why would the garbage disposal be in the master bath?
Yeah, Mike's the one in the wrong
here. Yeah, right, no. Didn't expect Susan to show up. They did, you bitch.
Susan then goes upstairs to find the bedroom is full of flower petals, candles, a bottle of champagne.
It's a porn set.
Yeah, it's Catherine's idea of seducing a man.
Yeah, girl's getting ready to set up her own OnlyFans.
Yeah.
With Mike, it's right there, all set up. Like,
it looks like a music video.
Chocolate-covered strawberries.
Susan then questions her for trying to seduce Mike. There's also more petals and a bubble bath.
Yeah.
In the bathroom?
Catherine claims that this is how she always does it before she goes to bed. She's like, oh, I always do this before I go to bed.
I kind of wish that were true. Because honestly, what a life.
I know, right?
Good for you.
Champagne, chocolate-covered strawberries, rose petals all over the bed. And that's just how I go to bed.
Bubble bath.
Yeah.
A whole bottle of champagne.
What would her aim have been here?
Seduce Mike.
Well, yeah, I know. But Mike wouldn't have fallen for it.
Yeah, but she's off her rocker.
I know.
So Susan tells her that she needs to get help, and Catherine threatens to sue her again, and then they fight, smashing chocolate-covered strawberries in each other's faces. And this leads to them falling into the bathtub.
Oh my god, the ladies are fighting and it's so messy.
Yeah, it's really messy. Mike doesn't hear a thing. He just looks over when Susan comes downstairs, dripping wet all over the carpet.
I know, he can hear the squelching.
And she just says, we hate her.
Yeah, we hate her again.
Is he deaf?
Well, yeah, probably.
She was screaming for him to come upstairs.
Mike, that's evidence, Mike.
Yeah, I love that she just blows out the candles as if that will solve anything.
Yeah, that gets rid of everything.
So it was quite short, but that was Susan's story.
That was a fun story. That was a fun little story. I think, oh God, it was so great.
So finally, we are now on to the Bolands. We see Angie looking at a picture of a woman and a child, and she begins to cry before Catherine just kind of lets herself in.
She just walks in like, girl, what are you doing? She knocks, but she walks in. Like, knock and wait.
Yeah, she just walks right in. She tells Angie that their plan, taking the high road with Susan, is working perfectly. She then asks about the picture, which is Angie and her mother, apparently. And apparently her mother died.
Mm.
Angie then tells Catherine that they're not in this together, but Catherine just thinks that Angie is upset and runs off to bake her a pineapple upside down cake.
What is it with these hoes and pineapple upside down cake?
This isn't even the best pineapple upside down cake scene.
It's really not. We have a much better pineapple upside down cake scene in the future. But what is it? It's a good cake. Don't get me wrong. I love a pineapple upside down cake. Oh God, they're so good. But these hoes and pineapples, there are other cakes, ladies.
Later on, Angie picks up the phone and has a conversation with her mum. So apparently not dead.
Picks up the phone. It's a burner phone. She takes out the pack.
To tell her that her family is safe. She then sees Catherine in the doorway and quickly hangs up. So Catherine has once again just let herself into this house, and Angie wasn't even aware while on the phone. So Catherine questions the phone call, but Angie says it was her mother-in-law, not her mum. Catherine also questions why Angie has a prepaid phone, which she does explain away.
Angie's got an excuse for everything.
Yeah, she's quick. She's very quick. She then tells Angie all about her fight with Susan and says that she wants to talk to the police. And Angie tries to stop her from calling the police again, which seems to work. Before leaving, though, she also asks if Nick's mother is Italian, noting that Angie was speaking Italian at one point. And Angie says that it makes the mum feel sophisticated.
Angie's in danger, girl.
Oh, yeah.
In danger, girl.
Catherine is being a bit observant.
She's asking too many questions. That pineapple upside down cake does look damn good, though.
It really did look good.
It looked so... I mean, Catherine, we know Catherine can cook. If Catherine came over to me and was like, oh, I'll bake you a cake, I'd be like, sure.
I mean, Catherine's in her villain phase, so she's very devious, she's scheming, coming up with plans. So if she thinks that she's got something on Angie, this doesn't bode well for her.
No.
But then again, it doesn't bode well for Catherine either, because Angie will probably just murder her.
There was a writing inconsistency in this scene, though.
Oh, yeah?
How does Catherine know that the gun that Susan shot her with was actually the Boland's gun? Because she says in this scene, so I'm going to need that gun, you know, the gun that Danny gave to Julie.
She also doesn't know that Nick took the gun.
No.
So,
because Nick showed it at the end, but like sneakily.
Yeah.
So how does she know that this was the gun that was the Bolands, that Danny gave it to Julie, and that Nick stole it back? How does she know this stuff?
Yeah, she shouldn't know any of those things. So that is a writing inconsistency. Very good spot.
You know, unless it was already written in a scene, and then they cut that scene and then just didn't realise about this.
Following this conversation, knowing that Catherine is noticing a little bit too much about the Bolands, she goes over to Susan's and tells her that Catherine has lost her mind and keeps talking about getting Mike back. She then implies that maybe it was Catherine that strangled Julie, saying that maybe she didn't think it was Julie walking out of the house with her blonde curls.
Susan didn't believe Angie until Angie said that Susan and Julie could be mixed up. And then Susan was like, you're right. Oh yeah. My God, we really could. I am that young and supple.
Yeah, I wrote, strangely, Susan seems to believe that this may be true. But I mean, surely the colour of your hair is a dead giveaway to start with.
Well, yeah, but Angie's excuse was it was dark.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Yeah. But Susan's on edge because of what's just happened. So she does believe that this...
And Angie needs to be careful because all this lying and track covering is going to come back to bite her in the ass. Tell too many lies and you start to forget the lies you've told.
So the episode ends with Mary Alice talking about the rules we learn when we're little. She mentions how we learn not to say bad words, and we see a very sad looking Juanita on the house steps watching all the school kids walk past without her. We learn not to cheat on tests, and we see Tom leaving to go to college. Not to lie to our friends, and we see Lynette wave to Gabby as she runs by. Not to covet a man that isn't yours, she says. And we see Catherine watching Mike. And we learn not to betray a man who is ours, and we see Bree watching Orson leave for work. We then see that Orson has actually gone to the antique store that Bree said that she purchased the brooch from, asking about the brooch as he wants to surprise her with it. But they say that they only sell furniture, leading Orson to become very suspicious as Bree was very specific about getting it from this antique store.
Right, gag. This is really uncomfortable because it's really cringy to try and see Orson trying to win Bree back so much and it just falling on deaf ears.
It's also a shame that Bree clearly didn't do her research about this antique store.
Well, because she was kind of put on the spot. So she probably didn't really think that she would need to.
Yeah,
and
but
Carl was the one that was like,
"Be so specific."
No, I know, but Carl was the one that was like, "She bought it, I assume." And then Brie was like, "Shit, okay, now I've got to think of a shop."
But you don't have to think of a shop. She could have just said, "Oh, I got it from an antique store down the road when I was in town one day." But no, she's given this very specific store, and it's come back to bite her in the arse.
This is the thing with lies: too vague, and it's obvious it's a lie. Too specific and it's obvious it's a lie. There's a fine balance with a lie.
And that's where the episode ends.
Yes.
So let's move on to our next segment where Joel's going to give us the gayest and the straightest moments of the episode, starting with the gayest moment. What do you have?
My award for gayest moment. Goes to Susan and Mike for preferring brunch over barbecue.
Yeah.
Gays love a brunch.
Love a brunch.
We absolutely love a brunch. And if it's bottomless, even better.
I really don't understand why anyone wouldn't like brunch.
Right?
It's just the best.
It's so good. It's just like a nice little pick-me-up in the middle of lunch, breakfast and lunch. And who doesn't love a little pick-me-up snack kind of thing?
It also means you don't have to force yourself to eat in the morning because a lot of people can't do that.
No.
And then what do you have for straightest moment?
So my award for straightest moment... goes to Juanita for struggling to read, because straight people just can't read.
When did she struggle to read?
When she was...
She certainly wasn't struggling to read Gabby.
She was at homeschooling, when Gabby was homeschooling her, and she was reading the book, and Gabby was just like, oh, come on, just 5 more pages or something like that. Gabby wasn't caring either. So it could be that Juanita wasn't struggling to read. She just couldn't be bothered either. But I don't mean reading as in like... actual reading, like once upon a time, blah blah blah. I mean reading is in like schooling the children, like read, like reading to filth. So I'm using it as a double entendre.
Well, you are very smart.
I know.
So only you could do it.
I know. It was that year 7 homeschooling. So those are my awards. So congratulations to Susan and Mike and to Juanita. And now we move on to B and his awards for best and worst parent. So who do you have for the best?
No one.
Nobody got best parent?
No one got best parent.
I don't really think there was much parenting, really.
I mean, there was, but let's just say there wasn't.
None of it was good.
None of it was very good. So there's no best parent this episode.
Okay. Who do you have for the worst parent then?
So my award for
worst parent of the episode,
Gabby.
I thought you were gonna say everyone.
No, Gabby.
Why?
Well, there wasn't really much else to compare it to, but also
could have compared it to Tom setting a terrible example with the kids.
Yeah, no, I like to see it. But yeah, Gabby was a bit questionable this episode with the homeschooling in particular. I mean, she got her to iron for PE, which is weird considering that one time you got her to chase your car. You could have just done that again.
Well, no, because Juanita didn't do that in the end, did she? She jumped on the bus.
Well, she chased the car a little bit.
Yeah.
But either way, she got her to iron her clothes and then she was just very shit with the reading.
Yeah.
So, sorry, Gabby.
Well, bravo, bravo, fucking bravo.
So, if anyone has any questions, queries, comments or theories, Joel, where can they find us and share such things?
You can find us on Instagram at boyfriendsreview, and you can find us on Twitter at BFSreview.
We also have email, which is boyfriendsreview@outlook.com, and the artwork for the podcast is done by our friend Louis, who you can find on Instagram at DocRedMonkDesign, and he also does commissions. And also, obviously, you can leave us a review if you're so inclined on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to this.
Yes.
Join us next week when we'll be back in your ear holes with Season 6, Episode 7, Careful the Things You Say.
Yes.
Which I'm very aware is from Children Will Listen, from Into the Woods.
Careful the things you say.
So I don't even need to say that in the trivia next week. I already know it.
Yeah, but you still need to say it in the trivia.
True, but I don't need to research it. Actually, I will anyway, just in case it is from something else.
Yeah, just in case.
That has the same lyrics.
Children Will Listen.
So join us next time, and we'll see you then.
Bye, guys.
Bye.